You are listening to a sermon by Janice Kreider, recorded on Sunday, March 7th, 2010, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, you might think you're at a garden lecture today. I'm a farmer's daughter and an avid gardener. So of all the verses in the lectionary today, I had to settle on the parable of the fig tree in Luke 13, verses 6 to 9. But before I go to those verses, I want to tell a little about some trees in my garden, three trees. So the first one is an apple tree, which Evan and I planted, and it gave good apples for quite a while. But in the last few years, there was something wrong with the apples, and it got worse every year. And there were spots inside the apple. And it didn't come from worms, not that we sprayed every year, but it didn't come from worms. And it didn't come from scabs on the outside of the apple. It came from it was just in there. And I thought, oh, this is probably something really bad. Some fungal infection that they don't have any cure for, and we'll have to cut it down. But I took pictures of the apple to the UBC Apple Festival and showed them to some people, and they said, oh, you have a water core in your apples. And the cure for that, well, the problem is the soil isn't the right pH. And I thought, well, apple trees are fruit, therefore they should have an acidic soil. Wrong. They don't want an acidic soil, so you have to add lime. So that's what I'm doing, and we still have our apple tree. The other tree is an oak tree, and I think a squirrel planted it in a rock garden. And I wanted to dismantle the rock garden, and somebody cut down the tree, I don't know, but then we needed to take out the roots, and I was having a very hard time getting those roots out of there to get this whole thing redone. And the neighbor saw me, or us, struggling with these roots. And he came over with his Jeep and a winch and just pulled the whole thing out. And it's gone forever. Solved. The third tree is a holly tree. Now, this was a beautiful tree. It had red berries, and it was nice for Christmas decorations. People used to come over and cut off branches and take them for Christmas. But it was growing right in front of our living room window, well, sort of to the side, and it gave shade, you know, 12 months out of the year. And I wanted a little more light in the living room. Also, I have a person who does trimming, and he was complaining that it was all prickly, and he didn't like trimming the tree. And then on the ground below, you couldn't grow anything because the holly tree just sapped all the nutrition. So I decided that that should be cut down, so a different neighbor came over and cut it flush with the soil. So then I put a little more soil on the top, built it up a little bit, and planted quite a few lily of the valleys. However, every year I have to cut down a little sprout that comes from that stump. So the parable, we're going to get to the parable now. The parable of the fig tree. Now, we're in Lent, so you would think that in the lectionary, they would have things that have to do with Jesus' last week of life or whatever. And in his last week of life, he curses a fig tree. And I think we all remember that story. And you'd think that would be the one in the lectionary. But it's not. It's a parable instead. And I like this parable better. And maybe at the end you'll see why I like this parable better than that story of cursing the fig tree. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came looking for fruit on it and found none. So he said to the gardener, "See here, for 3 years I have come looking for fruit on this fig tree, and still I find none. Cut it down. Why should it be wasting the soil?" He replied, "Sir, let it alone for one more year until I dig around it and put manure on it. If it bears fruit next year, well and good, but if not, you can cut it down." So looking at verse 6, a man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came looking for fruit on it and found none. The man is the landowner, and it's not clear whether he planted the tree or if it was already there. And fig trees were not uncommon in vineyards because they were sometimes used as trellises, and then the grapes at the very top would be especially good and good quality. And there are numerous reasons why a fig tree would not have fruit, and Kevin, I think your description said, well, it indicated a lot of reasons why there might be a problem growing a fig tree. What I read was that if they're younger than 4 years, they won't bear. But we don't know how old this fig tree was. Verse 7, so the man said to the gardener, see here, for 3 years I have come looking for fruit on this fig tree, and still I find none. Cut it down. Why should it be wasting the soil? So the tree was probably, well, it was at least 3 years old. It should have been bearing, whether it was older or whether it was new. And some Bible versions say, why does it even encumber the ground? John Bunyan, in his commentary, calls the fig tree a cumber ground. I like that name, cumber ground. The tree was taking up valuable space and taking away nutrients. If the roots spread out, as you indicated, Kevin, it could be taking nutrients from the vines. However, if it would be cut down, then there wouldn't be that trellis there. Verse 8, the caretaker or gardener replied, sir, let it alone for one more year until I dig around it and put manure on it. Now, the gardener uses the word sir in some versions of the Bible, it's Lord. So I think he's a lower class person than the landowner. He's probably a landless peasant. But he's closer to the soil than the landowner is, and he's reluctant to jump at cutting down the tree. He's protective and wants to give it another chance. And I'm reminded of Abraham, who wanted to give the city of Sodom another chance. He knew his nephew Lot lived there, and so he was pleading with the Lord to spare the city. The caretaker, his reply, offering to do these two things to help the tree, shows the possibility of some negligence. Oops, I've been looking after the vines, but I forgot about this fig tree. Verse 9, the caretaker or gardener continues, if it bears fruit next year, well and good, but if not, you can cut it down. Now, there are three versions of this parable in early manuscripts. One is from Luke, one is a Coptic version, and one is from the Apocalypse of Peter. And our usual versions in the Luke that we have in our Bibles that we read is a bit of a combination of the early Luke version and the Coptic version. So I'll read what this earliest version of Luke, what it reads like. And if it bears fruit in the future, but if not, in the least, you will cut it down. Did you notice something missing? And if it bears fruit in the future, but if not, in the least, you will cut it down. It might be the way we talk. It's not the way we write. So the well and good is missing, and that comes from the Coptic version. And it makes it more of a proper grammatical sentence. And other two differences are next year versus the future. Those are the two differences there. Now, the Apocalypse of Peter was probably written later, and it's a story within a story. And it's quite a bit different. I'll read how it sounds. If it does not then bear fruit, we will immediately remove its roots from the garden and plant another in its place. So you can see they've taken some liberties with what was there earlier. Now, the verse says you can cut it down. The gardener is saying to the landowner, you can cut it down. But do you think the landowner will lift a finger? Probably not. The landowner will probably tell the gardener to cut it down. The gardener probably doesn't want to cut it down, but if the landowner tells him to do it, he'll do it. But he's leaving the decision to the landowner, obviously. Now, today we read this parable after we read verses 1 to 5. And when you do that, it's very easy to take the judgment and sin and punishment of verses 1 to 5 and bring them along into the parable. And it's easy to take the parable and make it into an allegory of Israel, Jerusalem, the temple and its destruction, and the fig tree being a symbol of righteousness from the Old Testament, and take all of that and get a lot of meaning out of it. But I'm not going to do that today, because one of the commentators I read took a little different tact. And instead of reading the parable after you read verses 1 to 5, if you read the parable and then read the stories that follow it, it's a little bit different. The story that comes right after this is about a woman who's bent over for 18 years. She has some very chronic back problem, and probably very hard to heal today, even. And she's healed by Jesus. The second thing is the parable of the small mustard seed, and we know about that. And then there is the parable of the tiny bit of yeast, and what hidden in flour, a woman is making bread, or whatever she's making. What we don't always realize with that parable is that it's a tiny bit of yeast, and she's taken a whole lot of flour. She's like some people in our family. She doesn't follow our recipe, and sometimes it doesn't work. But in this case, it's miraculous, because it does work. She takes this little yeast, and she doesn't even mix it up. She just puts it in there, and then this tremendous amount of flour. So what is coming out of these stories? Stories are... It looks like doom, or nothing's good going to come out of these stories. But then the unexpected good does happen. So if we look at those stories and then we look back to the parable, we might have a little more hope for the poor little fig tree. The parable is unfinished. It just ends, and we don't know if the tree will produce figs next year. We don't know. Maybe the tree will produce some figs, but not very many, and maybe the owner will want it cut down anyway, or maybe the gardener, the caretaker, will persuade the owner to keep it another year yet and see if it can. More manure will help. There may be natural forces that prohibit the fig tree from bearing at all, or bear whatever the humans do. So we really don't know. But we do know that the owner is kind of fixated on getting that tree cut down. But the Luke version says cut down. It does not say uprooted. So I'm remembering my holly tree. And I'd like to read some verses from Job. Job 14:7-9 that speak to this kind of situation. For there is hope for a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that its shoots will not cease. Though its roots grow old in the earth, and its stump die in the ground, yet at the scent of water it will bud, and put forth branches like a young plant. Another sign of hope with this parable is the caretaker's reluctance to jump in and cut down the tree. He wants to give it another chance. And he may or may not have been negligent in caring for it, but he certainly is an advocate for its life. So the elements of hope are there in that parable, even if they are a bit tenuous. The tree may respond to the special treatment. It might not respond, but the caretaker might persuade the owner to keep it another year. It might get cut down, but it might sprout again. But these are a lot of maybes. The story of the barren fig tree that is connected with Jesus' cleansing of the temple is a harsher story than the parable we've looked at today. In Mark, when Jesus is on his way to cleanse the temple, he says to the fig tree that has no figs, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And the next morning, the tree's already withered. It's dropping those leaves, yellow leaves or whatever. In Matthew, The morning following the cleansing of the temple, Jesus sees a barren fig tree and says, "May no fruit ever come from you again," and the tree withers on the spot. Now, Luke does not include this account at all. The parable of the fig tree has tiny elements of hope that the story of the cursed fig tree just doesn't have. That's why I prefer this parable. Now, one of the commentators that I read said this parable is not about the fig tree, but it's about two failed farmers. And when I heard this word failure, I thought of a sermon we had a couple of weeks ago by Carl. And he talked about failed engineering and how good engineering works. And he put a chart up here on this column. Unfortunately, I don't have it today, but the first step was discovering and admitting the mistake. So applying that to this story, it was the landowner that admitted the mistake. It's not bearing. For 3 years, it's not bearing. And the gardener must have been a bit in denial. Maybe he had one of those veils over his brain. And the second step is to isolate the mistake. In this case, the fig tree, there are numerous reasons why there were no figs there. I mean, they figured out, well, maybe manure and digging around it might help. And the third step that Carl had up here was to correct the flaws. And so their caretakers proceeding to do that. But do you remember the arrow that went back from the third step way back to the first step? And Carl said, You need to do this over and over again. You need to go back to the beginning and admit mistakes again. And so it could be that the fig tree will perk up a bit, but it might not produce very well, and they will have to go through the whole procedure again. Maybe they'll figure out, well, give it more water or less water or whatever. So this loop goes on and on, can go on several times around, and perfection is rarely reached, and this can be discouraging and can cause us to give up hope. I think of the Lord's Prayer, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Do we believe that's ever really going to happen? I mean, it's just, we never quite get there, but we still pray that prayer. As we keep trying to improve our fruit tree production, or personally as Christians to bear fruit worthy of repentance, we rarely reach that perfection that we desire. We're like software with more and more bugs coming to the surface. Last year, the apples on our tree were a bit less damaged by the water core than the year before, but they still weren't good enough to give to any one of you. Maybe next year, I keep adding lime. The parable of the fig tree is an unfinished story, and some people think plants have feelings. And if the fig tree had feelings at this point in the story, the fig tree might be pretty discouraged. I could be killed off. I don't know what's going to happen to me. It's looking pretty bad. I don't know if I can bear enough fruit to stay alive. And sometimes we might feel like that. We're in this snapshot, and we don't know what the future is like. It looks pretty grim, and it can be a time of hopelessness. Another point, and this is my last one, quite another way to reflect on the parable relates to how much patience and tolerance that we have. How long can we tolerate having an unproductive fig tree taking up valuable space in our land? Are we comfortable with weeds growing among the wheat from another parable of Jesus? We might want to cut down the unproductive fig tree and create some new space in our garden for something we think will be better. We may not, and this is my temptation, we may not be able to restrain ourselves from uprooting the weeds before they would seed, with the result of damaging the roots of the good wheat. How do we as Christians, and more generally, how does Christianity exist with encumbrances? And how do we work at balancing judgment and mercy?